Okay, you there?
Hang on, hang on. There you are. There you are.
I'm here.
Yeah, it's funny. We had to go put out signs for Debbie's shop today.
Uh-huh.
And we were driving around, and I said, yes, you know. She goes, so are you going to have a call today or not? I said, I don't know. I sometimes don't know until, like, the morning of, but I would know if I would have checked my phone last night. And so when I sent you the thumbs up this morning, Debbie goes, well, it's like only 5:30 there. I said, so she won't check it. Yeah, you already up?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Becky leaves at 5:30 every day, 5:15, 5:30, to go to
really?
Work. Uh-huh. Yeah, she works. Well, she works 10-hour days.
Oh.
She's got a new schedule. She's just started. It's 8 days on and 6 days off. So we'll see how that works for her. I mean,
Eight days in a row?
Yes. It's the way that everybody else in the group wants it. So
6 days in a row? 6 days in a row off, too?
Yeah, then you get 6 days off. That's why people want it. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So she just became a full-time person instead of a temp this week.
Oh.
So she starts her. So this is her first week. And the really good news is we found shoes that make her feet happy.
Oh, that's not even funny. That's the most important thing.
Exactly.
Wow.
It was so weird. We were in Spokane, and she had gotten some that were okay at Costco, so we went there. And then I said, well, you know, why don't you try Walmart, because those shoes often fit you. So she got a pair there, and then we were driving down to go to a gluten-free cafe, which turned out to be a great place. And I just looked off to the side, and it said, wide shoes. And it said, clearance sale. And I went, Becky, turn the corner.
And you found something that fit her feet?
Yeah, she came home from work yesterday, and she, you know, took her new shoes and then took her old pair with her. And she said, Linda, my feet are happy at the end of the day. She said, my toes can move and have room. And so, yeah, I said, okay, well, we got to get some more of those.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, I know that you know, with my hip and everything being screwed up for a long time, it's really a lot better now. I can almost run, believe it or not. I can almost run.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah. No, I've been sitting around so much that my left leg is now smaller than my right leg, literally. You can see the physical difference.
Really?
I'm like, wow, really?
So you only turn left when you walk.
Apparently.
You walk
none
in
of
circles.
That none of that Dexter stuff. I'm on the sinister side.
You're totally sinister. My left leg is shorter. I walk in circles.
Yeah, it could be because it's shorter. I don't know, but it's just so weird. Yeah. Anyway, I see you sent me something.
I just did because, I mean, two things happened yesterday while I was at Debbie's shop. I mean, number one, I mean, I finally approved the last of the book edits. And so it's done. It is actually done. But while it was...
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Well, no, I was just wondering, do you have an estimated cost to buy it?
Yeah, well, it's going to, well, for everybody else, really, it's going to be, what was the other book, $49? It'll be $59.
Okay.
It's $10 more because it actually cost me a lot more, but I can't see trying to recover all the money. It's 623 pages long. I mean, it's way beyond their 500-page limit. So because it's 623, there's a premium.
So is it? Does it have the pictures in it too? Did you use those?
I only used a couple of pictures just for reference.
Okay.
There's like maybe five, three or three, four or five in there. I don't know. They're necessary for the idea.
Uh-huh.
Pictures, especially. I mean, I really wanted this to be color, but then it got to be the price got to be ridiculous.
Yeah. Right.
Darwin Meets God's going to be color, and it's going to be mm-hmm. you know, it's only going to be 50 pages long, so
uh-huh.
it'll be reasonable. But a 600 page color book is off
not
the chart
cost.
I can't do it. I can't. And nobody would pay me to cover the cost of the book because everybody's so fucking cheap. They are.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm just going to say it like it is. I've never 15 years of education in this particular situation, and people are bitching about a $50 book.
Yeah.
People bitch about, you know, spending, oh, that's too much money. You know what? Go somewhere else with your with your erroneous beliefs.
Yep.
You know?
Well,
seriously.
We've been so indoctrinated into something for nothing in this country, which is such a lie. But
the word is entitlement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the word. That's what it means. When you believe that you're entitled to something, somebody else's stuff, that's communism, but it's also entitlement. So when somebody believes that, hey, Kurt, all this information is free, it's out there for everyone, then you spend 15 years of your life compiling all this stuff, putting it into one place, and then give it away.
Mm-hmm.
Give it away. 15 years of your life given away because people feel entitled to the information that's out there in the public domain. Yeah, go find it yourself.
Yep. Well, and
that's how I feel
it.
About this shit.
But they have to spend the 15 years, and they have to have a brain that can be non-indoctrinated to see it, too. I mean, those two things
are
pretty
essential. And that's almost
essential.
Impossible. There it is right there, Linda. Nobody can see this shit.
No, I couldn't do it. I spent years before I met you. I don't have a brain like yours.
My apologies. I'm dragging you through the mud.
No, I can see it as soon as you say it. I just don't.
Did you see what I just said?
Okay, say it again.
Did you see what I just said? I said I apologize for dragging you through the mud.
Through the mud.
What's the mud?
The swamp.
The maternal afterbirth is the mud.
Yeah.
That's why, Linda, listen, there are so many people out there talking about the mud flood. Have you seen any of that shit where these people are talking about the mud floods?
No.
Okay, that's because you're not on the internet like I am doing things, but my point is that the mud flood, people are out, just like flat earth, people are out there talking about mud floods, but they don't know what mud is. They don't know what the mud is. The mud is the maternal afterbirth.
Yeah.
That's the flood. We're stuck in the mire, in the swampiness of the maternal afterbirth. That's the mud flood. But people think this is a literal, a real flood of mud.
Well,
unbelievable how stupid.
The BS.
It doesn't even matter. Well, that's my point. You can call it bullshit if you want, but I'm talking about people that have no ability to think critically.
Mm-hmm.
None, zero. They believe whatever somebody else brings to them. Hey, look at Kurt, flat earth. Yeah, fuck, get the fuck away from me. Hey, look at this mud flood. We were under mud. No, we weren't. You know what? The mud is the maternal afterbirth that everybody's being subjected to.
Yeah.
We're still under the mud. The word landslide. A landslide. It's all the same stuff, Linda.
Yeah.
We're covered under the rubble of the maternal afterbirth. It's a landslide.
Yeah.
I mean, who sings a song about a landslide?
Can't tell you. I'm not good at that stuff.
My point is that nobody writes a song about a landslide.
Yeah.
Unless they were handed the song by somebody that wants to promote something. And that's kind of where this whole thing is I can't find anybody that has the ability to think clearly. I just actually got rid of a guy. Off of Facebook that had been following me for a long time, and then he went off in his own ideas and started promoting this executor bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Executors aren't necessary for a living man.
No.
Tell me exactly what part of your life, Linda, you need an executor.
I don't.
Yeah, well, I thought so 10 years ago I was following some idiot that believed in this executor shit, and I actually found it. It made sense to me at the time. But until I realized I'm not dead. There's no part of me that requires an executor or a trustee or a fiduciary. There's no part of my life that requires that stuff. Now there's a guy that's been following me that figures out that he can piece this together, and then what he has to do is take control of this decedent estate. So he got lost again, like everybody else gets lost.
Yeah.
He got lost. Well, and then he says, Kurt, it's all – Linda, listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
He said it's my ego that won't allow me to speak about the executor. When in fact my ego has nothing to do with reality.
Oh, God.
I'm screaming about reality and he's talking about a goddamn executor. I'm fighting everybody every turn I go. Everywhere I go, people are this fucked up and they're not willing to listen to reality. Nobody's willing to accept reality. They'll go everywhere else, Kurt, the mud floods, the flat earth.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this is a battle that can't be won.
I agree, actually.
So I'm sitting here giving my final approval on this. By the way, the letter, the line that we were going to cover today in the letter was or is, such reserved measures are deemed necessary and proper in a realm secured by artfully commingled deposits. That's the line we were going to do today.
Yeah.
Now, in the book, the line is, said violently removed federally reserved measures are deemed necessary and proper in a realm secured by artfully commingled deposits, because I have more room in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, in the book it says, said violently removed federally reserved measures. In the letter, it says such reserved measures are deemed necessary and proper. Now, yesterday what I discovered was the necessary and proper. I mean, I put that in specifically just like I put in ways and means.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that necessary and proper is this weird-ass idea that allows them to extend their reach beyond the Constitution. It is, and it's federally reserved, but what's small f federal?
Man's covenant with God.
And so that's the whole idea, and that's in the book. I didn't put federal in the letter because necessary and proper brings you back to federal.
Yeah. Okay.
So when you look up the necessary and proper clause in the Constitution, it's a federal position. I don't want to talk about that today. Even though it's absolutely amazing. I mean, what I've discovered in the necessary and proper clause and what's in that letter and what's in the book is so unbelievable.
Wow.
Unbelievable. But so is what I want to talk about today, which is I want to piggyback on what we talked about this past Tuesday.
Okay.
Which was the undue influence.
Okay.
Because the case, the court case, I'm sorry, what?
No, I'm ready. That's all.
Okay. Because the court case, did I send you the, I'm hoping I sent you the right thing.
Ordorizo versus Bloomfield School District.
Ordorizo versus Bloomfield School District.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I want people to understand undue influence. Now, I know where it comes from. I explained it in the last call. In other words, there's my kingdom, my biological kingdom. Baby umbilical and extra-embryonic is my biological kingdom. That's it. That's the entirety of my kingdom.
Yes.
And I'm the king. I have all the authority over that biology, over that kingdom. From fertilization to last breath, all present and accounted for. I'm it. I'm the only authority. But when you add the maternal part of the placenta, you go beyond. And now there's something else that is considered. I'm talking about the word consideration now.
Yes.
It's considered. And when the weight of consideration, the weight of that maternal part of the placenta changes everything. And the weight of that maternal part of the placenta becomes influential.
Yes.
If unum sanctum is giving Rome, or is Rome or the pontiff, the pope, if the pope is claiming the human creature or the afterbirth material, and we allow the afterbirth or the placenta to stand as the birth certificated person without us knowing the difference between our kingdom and that tertium quid placenta, if we don't know how to differentiate our true kingdom from the addition, the surplus, the excessive, then we're going to be influenced by that excess.
Yes.
By the excess. And I don't know how, if we ever got there. Did I ever bring in the word indulgence in the last call?
Briefly, I think we mentioned it, touched on it.
Because an indulgence, yeah, it's the excessive. It's, mm-hmm. it's the extra yeah. amount that is considered. And when that amount is considered, it becomes the human creature that's subject to Rome. That's what I'm getting at. Me by myself, not subject to Rome. But if I allow that excessive amount, the extra amount, the maternal amount, to come in as consideration, that excess becomes an indulgence. And remember that the church, the Roman Catholic Church, used to sell indulgences. Yeah, we did speak about this a little bit. What I'm trying to do, yeah, right, but I'm just trying to set the stage for the undue influence of this case. In fact, I'm going to go right to a really major quote, and I want to explain it because then, I want to go through this case.
Okay.
Because by the time we're done with this case, you'll see, I don't want people to talk about biology, ever. I want them to know what the biology does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to be talking about the maternal part of the placenta to a judge or some attorney. It's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
It's absolutely stupid to be talking biology in a goddamn courtroom. You have to know the effect.
Yeah.
Let me go to this part. Sorry, I'm all riled up already. You know why I'm riled up? Because I get called all the time from people telling me that, well, I told the judge, I told the attorney I come from the zygote. Unbelievable. And then I have to sit there and worry about these people. I worry about them. That's the problem. That's why I'm angry, because they put me in a position and said, well, I told them about the zygote. Well, you know what? Why would you do that? Does that make any sense? What they're doing there? Anyway.
No.
Here's what I want.
No.
I'm sorry, what?
I just said no. Makes you look like an idiot. Yeah.
Go down to just scroll down through this case text until you get to we paraphrase the summary. We paraphrase the summary of undue influence given the jury by Sir James P. Period Wild. Go down to that paragraph. We paraphrase the summary. Okay. That's Hall versus Hall, 1868.
Wow.
Now, I'm going to explain how ridiculously obvious undue influence is. And again, people won't see it. By the way, undue influence cancels everything. It cancels everything. There's no way they can hold you under anything if you can show undue influence. There is no case. It's gone. It's dismissed. Because there can't be a contract. There are no contracts.
Right.
If any undue influence is evidenced, no contracts. Zero. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
That makes sense.
Is there a system in the merchant courts that we're struggling with down here? I'm not talking about the upper appellate courts. I'm talking about the courts you find yourself in because of a speeding ticket.
Right.
Or anything else for that matter at this point. Because the birth certificated person is exactly causing this. And it's causing it because of the extra amount, the extra consideration of the maternal afterbirth. But goddamn it, if you say, well, my mom's maternal afterbirth is causing all this problem, you're a moron.
Yeah.
You have to understand the mechanics and what gives rise to these words and what gives rise to undue influence, but you're goddamn it, you're not going to talk about the excessive maternal afterbirth. You're going to use the word undue influence. But you need to know what's behind it.
Yeah.
So you have confidence in your words. I don't want anybody in the PMA that doesn't know this shit, Linda.
Yeah. You
I don't want to have a babysit.
It.
I don't want to have a babysit.
Yeah. Yep.
Here's what it says at Hall versus Hall, 1868. What else happened in 1868?
1868.
The 14th Amendment citizen.
Oh, jeez.
The 14th Amendment citizenship was created in 1868. Now, of course, whether it was ratified or not, I'm not going to argue that, but I'm just saying 1868 is the year that the 14th Amendment citizenship was created. And I think the 14th Amendment citizenship is this separated, cut-off material. It's a human creature, given a franchise. Given a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Look what Hall versus Hall says. Look what Hall versus Hall says. To make a good contract, there it is, a contract. We're talking about contracts because everybody thinks it's all about contracts. Okay, here we go. It's all about contracts. No contract, we're not in court. Right?
Yep. Right.
There it is. To make a good contract, a man must be a free agent.
Yep. Says it right there.
Pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will without convincing the judgment, is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. Now, let me, in my words, say what that says. This is my words. I'll beat this fucking dead horse to death over and over and over until people get it. Pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will without convincing the judgment, is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. This is my interpretation of that. You can beat me to death, but you won't change my mind.
Yeah.
That's how I interpret that. You can beat me to death in the street, but you're not going to change my mind. I'm not an infant. You can beat me to death. You can throw me in jail for the rest of my life, But it's not going to change my mind. I'm not the infant that you seek.
Yeah.
That's pressure of whatever sort which overpowers the will. They starve you. They beat you. They threaten you with jail time. That's breaking your will. So they break your will. They get you to sign something at the goddamn jail. You didn't sign that because you were convinced they were right. You signed it because you were forced to. Your mind hasn't been changed.
Mm-mm. No.
If people don't get this, everything they're doing is based upon a birth certificate at infancy. Everything, the whole goddamn system is based on it. Oh, Kurt, what we need to do is we need to be the executor over that infancy. Okay, so you want to claim to be the infant. You want to play this ridiculous fictional game. Go ahead. I don't care.
Well, I just want to point out that the base of the word executor is execute.
To execute something. What are you executing? Am I just killing off my infancy? If that were the case, fine. But you know what? I don't want to play these goddamn games.
Oh, I don't either.
I'm not an infant. I haven't been an infant for 63 years.
Yeah.
What I'm getting at, it says, to make a good contract, a man must be a free agent. Pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will. Pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will. Threats, coercion, all that shit, doesn't matter. Anything. Pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will. Without convincing the judgment. Is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. That line right there. When you understand that pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will without convincing the judgment, that's right there is undue influence.
Yeah.
You're influencing, you're forcing me, you're scaring me to death, you're terrifying me, you're a terrorist, goddammit.
Yep.
Forcing me to sign this document against, now people say, well, that's against my will. No, your will is broken.
Yeah.
Your will is broken. It's your judgment that hasn't changed. That's it right there. It says, it's not the will, Linda, it's the judgment. Your judgment doesn't change.
Yeah.
They didn't convince you of anything. No matter what, they starve you, they beat you, they threaten you with jail time, and you know what? That's all undue influence.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if it doesn't change your mind, if you're still saying, I'm sorry, but I'm not an infant.
Right.
That is undue influence. And they're using everything to get you to admit to infancy. I mean, it's real simple. They say, well, when's your birthday? It's already done.
Yeah.
But even though the birth certificate of character is what's influencing the outcome, the difference is what if you don't accept the birthday? What if you don't accept the infancy? Now they got to beat you. They got to starve you. They have to threaten you with jail time. That's undue influence. Because when it comes down to it, I'm not an infant. And I know I'm not an infant. I've evolved beyond infancy. That's my judgment. My judgment is I'm not an infant.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't changed my mind. You haven't changed my judgment of the situation. Now it's undue influence. It's not your will. It's your judgment. They've already broken your will. You're going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to jail. You're going to jail. I don't want to go to jail. Well, then sign right here. Agree to the terms.
Mm-hmm.
That's undue influence.
Mm-hmm. Undue influence, absolutely.
It says, pressure of whatever sort which overpowers the will without convincing the judgment is a species of restraint. It says species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. So the contract is null if it's undue influence. Doesn't matter that you signed anything. Driver's license. You're going to get beaten to death in the streets if you don't sign this driver's license or have this driver's license. Yeah. You're going to jail. We're going to haul you off to jail. That's undue influence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know what's behind the influence. I know biologically what it is, the consideration. I know the consideration that's being added to my kingdom, which creates a burden for me to carry. I know all that biologically. What I'm getting at is that if I claim the very thing that adds the burden, which is what they want me to do, now I'm subject, now I'm the one that has to pay the bill. Mm-hmm. As long as I choose to carry the burden that the birthday offers me, the burden of the public, that's what it is. It's the burden of the public. I become my brother's keeper.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when you can't change my mind? You're not going to change my mind. You can't change my mind when I know what's real and what's not. You can. It's the threat. That's all that everything they do to threaten you is to break your will. But most people say, well, that's against my will. Well, it is. There's no doubt about that. But what about, have you changed your mind? I mean, it's the difference, I'll read this, but it's the difference between seduction and rape.
Yeah.
I mean, the outcome is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, again, that's what they're saying. They're saying that the force to get you to act is the rape. Seduction is them convincing you so you agree. It's going to look like your judgment has changed. So seduction is your judgment being changed. So you've been seduced into agreeing. Now it looks like it's your judgment. It's not your will. It's the judgment now that, yeah, okay, I see it your way. I see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Now your judgment has been changed. The difference between rape, the force, or the seduction. That's the difference. But what happens when you can't be seduced?
Right.
Now all of a sudden, everything they've tried, they try force, they try seduction. Now what? I'm sorry, but I can't be the infant ever again. I'm long past infancy. I can't play the role of infant. Not biologically and not intellectually. I can't play the role of infant.
Yeah.
And now that's undue influence. So let me finish this. This is out of the case, Hall versus Hall, and then I'm going to go back to the top. Because to me, this is everything. To make a good contract, a man must be a free agent. Pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will, without convincing the judgment, is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. Now, if you know this, if there can never be a contract, if you don't change your mind, they can force you to sign something, they can break all your fingers, they can starve you to death, they can threaten you with everything. But if they don't change your mind, it's undue influence. You have to agree that what they're doing is acceptable. You have to agree that it's acceptable. I mean, if I have six beers and I get stopped, have I caused any damage anywhere? Where are you? Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I have six, yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
You can't hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. If I have six beers and I'm on my way home a block from my house, has anything been damaged?
Mm-hmm.
Has anything been damaged?
No.
No. But what if I get stopped? And they want to issue a DUI. What tell me
They're
what
assuming.
law?
What law?
Well, but my point is nothing. There is no damage, there is no
There
victim,
is
there is
no
nothing that
law.
went wrong.
Yeah, there is no law that covers that.
Well, they're going to say that there is. They're going to say, well, you blew a 0.08 or whatever it is, wherever you're at. What does that mean?
Yeah.
That is within a community that I'm not party to.
Right.
I'm not subject to that particular nation.
Right.
I'm long past that. I'm not within the limits of that nation or whatever you want to call your community. I'm long past that. And that's the problem with everything that's going on. If you don't know the root of the problem, if you don't know the source of the problem, then you're just spinning your wheels. And I'm really sad. This is, I mean, obviously you can hear my frustration. This is too easy. It's too easy, Linda. And once you learn the source of the problem, everything else fits really easy.
Yeah.
And it really is easy.
Yeah, I agree.
And again, if the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step and your first step is in the wrong direction, everything you're doing after that first step is wrong. Everything. That's what's going on here. Nobody knows where the direction that nobody knows where reality is anymore. They're always stepping off into the fiction. And now everything that they're doing along the way is wrong. It's contrary to life. It's contrary to life itself. That's why even the PMA that I'm trying to establish in the minds of other people, the PMA, Private Member Association, the member is not what people think it is. It's actually the piece biologically that was cut off of you that is now in your memory, all present and accounted for. It's the member is the and accounted for. That's what the member is.
Yeah.
If it's accounted for and you're self-governing, now you're governing also what is accounted for there. Now there's no piece of you that becomes subject to some other government if it's accounted for. But private member association is the full accounting all the way back to fertilization. And now your ability to self-determine or self-govern is whole. There's no piece of you out there to fall under undue influence. Okay, so here, let me finish this quote. To make a good contract, a man, maybe I can relax. How about this? To make a good contract, to make a good contract, to make a good contract. All right, all the anger's gone. Now I want to la I'm going to start laughing at people now.
Good.
Because I
It'll
would
be
rather
easier.
laugh. I would
It'll be
rather
much.
laugh at people.
Yeah. Like, are you fucking kidding? Yeah.
Yeah. To make a good contract, a man must be a free agent. I mean, look at that. A free agent.
Yeah, right there. Yeah.
If you're already bound to a birth certificate at infancy, are you a free agent?
Absolutely not.
No, look at how stupid simple that is. To make a good contract, a man must be a free agent. You can't be dragging around some ball and chain and call yourself a free agent. Evolutionary process from evolutionary process from fertilization to this moment. It's a singularity. It's one life. There's no additional thing to carry. There's no additional burden unless you're going to carry the burden of the public.
Yeah,
And the public is evidenced by the mud, by the swamp of the mother, which is the maternal part of the afterbirth. If you want to carry that burden with you, I guess you can. But you're not a free agent. To make a
And
good
I just want to say anyone who's not a free agent cannot make a good contract. It's impossible.
Well, you can't make a good contract, because if you're not a free agent, then you're subject to some other influence. I mean, if I'm a free agent, I'm not subject to any outside influence.
Right.
I make all the decisions for me, 100%, all of me, my entire estate. No piece of my estate's out there to be subjected to some other influence or somebody else's mindset or some collective.
Yep.
So, again, if I'm a free agent, that implies all of me in this moment, all present and accounted for, and I'm the government over all of it. That's free agency.
Yep.
To make a good contract, a man must be a free agent. Look at that. It's so weird, too. It says to make a good contract. Good.
Oh.
It didn't say to make a contract. It says to make a good contract.
Oh, wow. I missed that. I'm born of animals. Wow.
Or the other. You know? Remember that.
Or the other?
Yeah, because then remember that goods are the unborn of animals, but also identify things attached to realty.
Yes, yes. Got it.
As fixtures. And, of course, the identified thing is your own boat attached to the realty, Mom's Island. That's a good.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, I see it.
But it says, but to make a good contract, a man must be a free agent. Pressure of whatever sort which overpowers the will without convincing the judgment is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. Importunity or threats, if carried to the degree in which the free play of a man's will is overborne, constitute undue influence, although no force is used or threatened. A party may be led, but not driven, and his acts must be the offspring of his own volition and not the record of someone else's.
Wow.
I know, not the record of someone else's. It says a party may be led, but not driven. And his acts must be the offspring of his own volition and not the record of someone else's. So the record,
wow,
the act, the recorded act, it can't be someone else's.
Wow.
But that's a double-edged sword. If they have a deposit, if they have the placenta on deposit, because I left it behind, I've forsaken it, I abandoned it. I know it's by presumption because I'm still using my biology. But if they think that they have a piece of me on deposit, on the record, on the public record, and I keep celebrating the birth or the birthday, then the record stands. It stands unrebutted. The record stands unrebutted. So now my biology is part of that record. And here's what it says. A party may be led but not driven, and his acts must be the offspring of his own volition and not the record of someone else's. If I remove all my stuff from the birth certificated character biologically, in my mind, all present and accounted for. If I pull my biology out of the deposit, that's, by the way, what's the deposit? Remember, mom's material on me is an accretion. What's my material on the mom's land?
An avulsion.
An avulsion. And, of course, an avulsion doesn't work a change of boundary, so my property, once I identify it, I can pull it all together. I can pull myself together. Pull yourself together, Kurt. Get your shit together, man. Now, if I pull all my stuff in under my roof, under my mind, into my own self-government, now no piece of me is part of that record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look what it says. A party may be led, but not driven. And his acts must be the offspring of his own volition and not the record of someone else's. So all that's left on the record is my mom's biology. Now, they can't force that record upon me.
No.
They can't.
I see it.
You see it?
Yeah.
Look what else it says. In essence, undue influence involves the use of excessive pressure. Excessive. Excess.
Excess. Wow.
Surplus. That's the indulgence right there. The maternal part of the placenta is the indulgence. So
yep.
Rome is still selling indulgences. They're still selling them. And in a system, in a ecumenical economy where Christianity is the rule, and the sacrifice, the biological sacrifice, the blood sacrifice is the only form of payment, now it makes sense.
Yep.
In essence, undue influence involves the use of excessive pressure to persuade one vulnerable to such pressure, pressure applied by a dominant subject to a servient subject. In combination, look at this, in combination, the elements, in combination, comma, the elements of undue susceptibility in the servient person and excessive pressure by the dominating person make the latter, the dominating person, influence undue, for it results in the apparent will of the servient person being, in fact, the will of the dominant person. Look at how many people have heard, you know, his mom called him by his middle name.
Yeah. Yep.
His mom called him by his middle name. That is this statement right here. The maternal afterbirth and the fetal afterbirth. The dominant mother over the servient child.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. His mom must be really mad. She called him by his middle name or initial.
Yeah.
Isn't that the legal name?
Yep.
Yeah. So that they're establishing him, but look what it said here, Linda, in combination, comma. Isn't that the composition of matter at 35 U.S.C. 101?
Yep. Wow.
It says in combination, comma, the elements of undue susceptibility. That's the tertium quid.
Yep. Wow.
Again, you have to know the biology so these words make sense.
Yeah.
And then once you know what's behind the words, you can use your own words to undo what they're doing.
Yeah.
Let me go back one. I'm going to go back up to just the top of this paragraph. But then I want to start the whole case. I want to show what's actually happening in this particular case. Pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will, without convincing the judgment, is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. Pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will. That right there to me is, you can beat me to death. You can tread me all you want. Okay? That's the pressure of whatever sort which overpowers. Even if they break your will and they force you to sign something, Linda, they force you to sign something because of all the potential things that are going to go wrong in your life.
Right.
How about signing a check? How about signing your paycheck? How about signing a 1040?
Mm-hmm.
How about signing your name to anything next to the X? How about signing anything because you can't eat if you don't do it?
Yep. All
how
there.
About anything that's happened because you're forced to sign this thing? Because if you don't, you don't even have the necessities of life anymore.
Right.
You see the undue influence of the birth certificated person everywhere you look, because without that person, without that social security number, you don't do anything. You don't have a bank. You can't put money anywhere. Hell, there isn't even any money anymore. There's no money. The entire system is based on undue influence.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me finish this, and then I'm going to the top. Pressure of whatever sort which overpowers the will. Again, they can even break your will.
Yeah.
They can have you sobbing and in a fetal position, all puns intended, in the middle, you know, at the corner of the jail cell.
Yep.
But as long as they don't change your mind, which is the next line here, it says, without convincing the judgment. Without convincing the judgment. In other words, they can beat you to death or nearly, but if you stand your ground and say, I can't be the infant that you need me to be. I've evolved beyond that infancy. I'm long past that infancy. I can't claim it because it'd be a lie. If I claim what you're asking me to do, it'd be a lie.
Yep.
So if you stand your ground and tell the truth, if you just tell the truth, if you don't try to manipulate anything, just tell the truth. All present and accounted for from fertilization to last breath. That's the truth of the matter all the way back. So are they going to change your mind? No, but they're going to make you sign this thing so you can go home.
Yeah.
They're going to make you sign this thing so you can get paid. They're going to make you sign this thing so your car doesn't get towed away.
Yep.
That's undue influence.
Yeah.
As long as you haven't changed your mind.
Yeah.
That's how simple this is. And by using the term undue influence, you know, with this knowledge, it's different than saying, I began as a zygote.
Yeah.
You guys are using a birth. That person's not me. That birth certificated person's not me. Instead of saying all that nonsense, you say, hey, listen, this is somebody here. Let me give you an example. When's your birthday, Linda? Or say, ask me.
Kurt. When's your birthday?
Linda, aren't birthdays for infants? If I claim infancy, Linda, wouldn't I then be perceived as an infant? If I'm perceived as an infant, wouldn't I be acted upon as an infant?
Do you want me to be the police?
I'm just asking. I'm asking you questions now because I'm not going to ever make a claim. I'm not ever making a claim. That's not me.
Yeah.
I don't have a birthday.
Yeah. Don't you ask the question.
Ask me again.
When's your birthday?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't birthdays for infants, Linda?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you answer that? How can you come back with that? Say, I mean, I'm a 64-year-old man, Linda. If I claim a birthday today, 64 years later, wouldn't somebody want to treat me like the infant? And then to be treated like an infant, wouldn't? I mean, that would change everything for me to be treated like an infant. Of course, if you force me to claim a birthday, that would be undue influence. Because I'm not going to change my mind.
Right.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't birthdays for infants?
Yeah.
Anything other after that? Ask the question.
Mm-hmm.
I thought birthdays were for infants. Are they not?
Yeah.
I don't care how you do it. Aren't birthdays for infants, Linda? Where are you going to go with that?
Yep. Yeah, the only thing I know is someone saying, I don't care. I want this in order to do my job.
That's undue influence. Now that's the next word out of your mouth. Wouldn't that be undue influence?
Yeah.
No, I mean, then you ask that question. That's the next question. Well, I don't care about that. I just need to. I need you to do this so I could do my job. Wouldn't that be undue influence?
Yeah.
No, that's my question to whoever's saying that to me. Isn't that undue influence?
No, I don't know what you mean by undue influence. I just want your driver's license and your birthday.
Well, it sure seems like a threat. Don't you, I mean, seriously, I'm just asking. it seems like a threat. I mean, so I have to provide something that I know it doesn't relate to me.
Well, you're driving on the road, don't you?
You see what's happening? They're going to try to do everything they can.
Yep.
What language are you speaking at this point? Are we using the same terms? I don't. What they've done is they've created a world that language is different. Everything is based upon the fiction. You don't want to do this out in the street, Linda.
No, I know.
What I'm getting at is you don't want to argue with anybody in the street. You really don't want to do that. You know what? Give them a goddamn license.
Yep.
If you have one, just give it to them and say, listen, this isn't mine, but the state requires it. You know, or whatever, wherever you are, Kansas requires it. What do you mean it's not yours? Well, this is trust property, you know. I don't even know what that is, but they require it. I'm forced to carry this.
Mm-hmm.
What are you opening the door for?
When I'm forced.
If you're forced to carry, you're right. If you're forced to carry the license, what are you opening the door for?
Undue influence.
There it is right there. So, again, once you understand that the license is undue influence, you're forced to carry a license so they don't beat you to death in the street.
Right.
And, of course, by carrying the license, you're subject to all the rules of the road and all that stuff. Again, the license itself, it is the undue influence. By you being forced to carry it so you don't get beaten to death, so you don't go to jail when they stop you, that's undue influence. If you don't have a license, they're gonna. It escalates. It's the escalation that's the undue influence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nature doesn't require me a license to go from A to B or from here to there.
Uh-uh.
Again.
Well, the fact
when
that
you
they walk up with.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the fact that they, if you don't sign it, you don't get it, and then if you're, going from one place to another and the person that comes and arrests you, stops your movement, has a gun, that's excessive pressure in my world.
When we go through this case, you'll see it.
Okay.
I mean, it all makes sense when you realize it could be anything that's going on. This happens to be a school teacher that, you know, responded in a certain way and he got fired and everything else, and we'll see that. What I'm getting at is you're not at war with anybody. You have the truth on your side.
Yes.
Everybody that wants to manipulate and play the game, they're at war.
Yeah.
They're at war. They need to be at war in order to play. The game is war. That's the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what are you trying to do? You're trying to gain ground. What ground are you trying to gain?
The extra.
Right, the motherland. Yeah, you're trying to gain access to Mother Earth.
Yep.
You're trying to get home. You're just trying to evidence that you belong here.
Mm-hmm.
Reality versus fiction. I'm just trying to get back to reality. Substance, the world of substance.
Yeah.
All right. Let me, okay, so I'm going back. This is 1966.
Okay.
The court case is Odorizzi, O-D-O-R-I-Z-Z-I, Odorizzi, versus Bloomfield School District. And it says, identifying the elements to establish undue influence. This is big. This is big because it's everything. All I mean, when you have the knowledge behind the undue influence, it's so obvious that everything that's happening, it doesn't matter. But everything out there, 22 USC 288B says, when an owner arrives in connection with his baggage and effects, there is no duty to perform. There is no IRS. Why? Because the whole man isn't subject to any of this.
Right.
Any of it.
And,
Chapter 12, 67th Congress, 1921, talks about when both terminal ends, in other words, the baby on one terminal end and the extra-embryonic on the other terminal end of what? Of the cord, the underwater cable, which is the umbilical cord. When all of that arrives to the continental United States as one unit, there's no license.
Right.
Again, right back to the whole man.
Yep.
Okay. November 3rd, 1966. Appeal from a judgment of Superior Court of Los Angeles County, Shirley M. Period Huffstetter Judge reversed. Action by a school teacher for declaratory relief and for rescission of a resignation allegedly submitted under undue influence. Judgment of dismissal after demurrer to amended complaint was sustained without leave to amend reversed. All right, I'm going to read the case now. Plaintiff Donald Ortorizzi was employed during 1964 as an elementary school teacher by defendant Bloomfield School District. Plaintiff is Ortorizzi. Defendant Bloomfield School District, and was under contract with the district to continue to teach school the following year as a permanent employee. On June 10, he was arrested on criminal charges of homosexual activity, and on June 11th, he signed and delivered to his superiors his written resignation as a teacher. A resignation which the district accepted on June 13th. In July, the criminal charges against Ortorizzi were dismissed under Penal Code Section 995, and in September, he sought to resume his employment with the district. On the district's refusal to reinstate him, he filed suit for declaratory and other relief. So he was found innocent of whatever homosexual stuff. He had already turned in a resignation. Now he's thinking, hey, listen, I was found innocent. I'm going to go back to being a teacher. But the district, Bloomfield School District, refused to reinstate him. So he filed a suit. So he became the plaintiff for declaratory and other relief. Okay. Ortorizzi's amended complaint asserts his resignation was invalid because obtained through duress, fraud, mistake, and undue influence, and given at a time when he lacked capacity to make a valid contract. In other words, his resignation. He's saying, I resigned because.
Right.
Okay. Specifically, Ortorizzi declares he was look at the words they're using, specific. Specifically, Ortorizzi declares he was under such severe... He was under such severe mental and emotional strain at the time, he signed his resignation. Having just completed the process of arrest, questioning by police, booking, the release on bail, and having gone for 40 hours without sleep, that he was incapable of rational thought or action. So look at what he said. He said emotional strain, the arrest, the questioning, the booking, the release. He's saying all this had an effect on me resigning.
Right.
While he was in this condition and unable to think clearly, the superintendent of the district and the principal of his school came to his apartment. The superintendent and the principal came to his apartment. They said they were trying to help him. They were trying to help him and had his best interest at heart, that he should take their advice and immediately resign his position with the district, that there was no time to consult an attorney, that if he did not resign immediately, the district would suspend and dismiss him from his position and publicize the proceedings, his aforedescribed arrest, and cause him to suffer extreme embarrassment and humiliation. But that if he resigned at once, the incident would not be publicized, and would not jeopardize his chances of securing employment as a teacher elsewhere. Odorizzi pleads that because of his faith and confidence in their representations. Does that sound like faith and confidence in a birth certificated representative of your own existence?
Yep.
The birth certificated character is a representation, and you have faith and confidence that it's yours.
Yep.
It says, Odorizzi pleads that because of his faith and confidence in their representation, they were able to substitute their will and judgment in place of his own, and thus obtain his signature to his purported resignation. A demurrer to his amended complaint was sustained without leave to amend. Look what it says here. He had faith and confidence in a representation. Just like everybody I know has faith and confidence that the birth certificated character
is them.
Is them. Yeah. So it's the faith and confidence. He acted on faith and confidence. Full faith and credit. In God we trust.
Wow.
Paragraph one. By his complaint, plaintiff, in effect, seeks to rescind his resignation pursuant to Civil Code Section 1689 on the ground that his consent had not been real or free within the meaning of Civil Code Section 1567, but had been obtained through duress, menace, fraud, undue influence, or mistake. So look what he put on the table. Duress, menace, fraud, undue influence, or mistake. All that stuff. That's what he put on the table. This is what's so cool about this. Now, they're going to take this case, and they're going to go through all of the other things. But ultimately, they can't get rid of undue influence. Let me keep reading. Yeah, they can find a way through all this other stuff, but they can't get out of undue influence. It says, a pleading under these sections is sufficient if, stripped of its conclusions, it sets forth sufficient facts to justify legal relief. In our view, the facts in the amended complaint are insufficient to state a cause of action for duress, menace, fraud, or mistake, but they do set out sufficient elements to justify rescission of consent because of undue influence. We summarize our conclusions on each of these points, and this is where it gets really amazing. Because they're going to tell you why not menace, you know what I mean? Why not all these other things? But they can't get out of this undue influence. So it says, no duress or menace has been pleaded. Duress consists in unlawful confinement of another's person or relatives or property, which causes him to consent to a transaction through fear.
Wow.
Duress is often used interchangeably with menace. But in California, menace is technically a threat of duress or a threat of injury to the person, property, or character of another. Now, again, we're going to be splitting hairs here.
Yeah.
We agree with respondents' contention that neither duress nor menace was involved in this case. So think about it. I mean, they're talking about specifically, you know, duress or menace. Because he got arrested. He was tired. He didn't have any sleep. He was going through the whole process of booking and all that. But I mean, it doesn't sound like he was threatened in any way, right?
Right.
Not in that process, but he definitely was. You know, some things happened by the superintendent and the principal. But look what happens here. We agree with the respondent's contention that neither duress nor menace was involved in this case because the action or threat in duress or menace must be unlawful, and a threat to take legal action is not unlawful unless the party making the threat knows the falsity of his claim. In other words, in order for that to be true, the one making the threat has to know has to know what they're doing is wrong.
Right.
So this is where plausible deniability is. So when if the people that are doing what to you, what doesn't seem right, if they don't know exactly why what they're doing is wrong, they have deniability. That's plausible deniability. But what happens when you let them know?
Yeah.
See, that's how intricate this crap gets. If somebody doesn't know what they're doing is wrong, or if it's accepted by the society or accepted by the community, then it's not wrong. It might be wrong on every other part of the world, but it's not wrong in that place, in that community, in that situation.
So that's why you can't say, well, I signed it under duress. It would never hold up.
No, it wouldn't. And that's why this is so amazing when you understand all the way down that it's not your, they can break your will. They can beat you until you sign. They can starve you until you sign.
Yeah.
But what happens if you don't change your mind ever?
Yeah.
That's where we're going with this. I mean, if you know the truth and you're willing to stand with the truth, all present and accounted for, this is my one godly estate, and that's it. It's unbroken. Yeah, but we cut a piece. It doesn't matter what you think. Okay. It says the amended complaint shows in substance that the school representatives announced their intention to initiate suspension and dismissal proceedings under education code at a time when the filing of such proceedings was not only their legal right, but their positive duty as school officials. So they had to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It was not only was it written in there that they had a legal right to do it, but it says their positive duty as school officials. They had to do that.
Uh-huh.
So think about that.
Yep.
They weren't doing anything wrong according to their handbook.
Right.
Although the filing of such proceedings might be extremely damaging to plaintiff's reputation, the injury would remain incidental so long as the school officials acted in good faith in the performance of their duties. Neither duress nor menace was present as a ground for rescission. So they think about it. It was within the rules. It was within the rules. So no matter how harsh it seemed, it wasn't duress or menace. Number two, or it says, nor do we find a cause of action for fraud, either actual or constructive. Actual fraud involves conscious misrepresentation or concealment or nondisclosure of a material fact, which induces the innocent party to enter the contract. By the way, when you know all of this, you do realize that fraud, it says actual fraud involves the non-disclosure of a material fact, which induces the innocent party to enter the contract. The innocent party is my entire biology from fertilization to last breath. That's the innocent party. I'm innocent from fertilization on. But the material fact that is never disclosed to you is the addition of mom, the addition of mom's biology, the excessive nature of that. That's the indulgence. That's the indulgence right there. It's the maternal accretion that becomes the indulgence, which gives consideration. That's the consideration.
Yep.
So I'm explaining something that is not involved in this case. It actually is, but not the way it's written. But it says non-disclosure of a material fact. The mom's material, that accretion, is a material fact. But again, do you want to talk about this stuff in that lower court, in that courtroom?
No.
No. I know what that excess does. I know what it does. It becomes influential.
Uh-huh.
But it's only the birth certificated character that has that excess. When I know all the way down my kingdom, the limits of my kingdom, my biology, and when I stand the ground of only my material, my kingdom, my biology, I'm not claiming mom's biology, therefore the consideration or the weight of that consideration is off the table. I remain innocent. I remain innocent. Anyway, let's keep going in the case, this case. Contractor says under the I think the restoration contracts 471, subsection 471, it says, a complaint for fraud must plead misrepresentation, knowledge of falsity, intent to induce reliance, justifiable reliance, and resulting damage. They're very specific with this fraud. While the amended complaint charged misrepresentation, it failed to assert the elements of knowledge of falsity, intent to induce reliance, and justifiable reliance. A cause of action for actual fraud was therefore not stated. So they dropped the fraud. So now the court got rid of the duress or menace. They got rid of the fraud. Goes on to say constructive fraud arises on a breach of duty by one in confidential or fiduciary relationship to another, which induces justifiable reliance on the latter to his prejudice. Here's what's interesting about the birth certificated character. If you're the one that is being forced into the trustee position, this is where constructive fraud can come in. It's a breach of your duty to not take care of this other character, this other person. When you know this stuff, you don't want to be playing. When I hear the word executor, you're talking about something that doesn't happen in nature. You're just playing games with these people. Going on to say, plaintiff, who's the plaintiff?
The plaintiff at this point is the
what's the name of the court case?
Odorizzi.
He's the plaintiff. So we got to always remember the teacher. This teacher that got let go after his resignation is the plaintiff.
Yeah.
It says plaintiff Odorizzi, the teacher, has attempted to bring himself within this category, the constructive fraud. For the amended complaint asserts the existence of a confidential relationship between the school superintendent and principal as agents of the defendant and the plaintiff. Agents of the defendant and the plaintiff. Think about that. So he's a teacher, and the superintendent and principal, aren't they above him?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't he have a confidential relationship with his principal at the school?
Yeah.
As a teacher, doesn't he have a confidential relationship with the school principal, and then also indirectly maybe with the superintendent?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's actually trying to say that because of that relationship, because of that confidential relationship, there's a constructive fraud. It says such a confidential relationship may exist whenever a person with justification places trust and confidence in the integrity and fidelity of another. I think so. I think that if I'm a teacher within a system, you have to trust those above you to do the right thing. Plaintiff, however, sets forth no facts to support his conclusion of a confidential relationship between the representatives of the school district and himself, other than that the parties bore the relationship of employer and employee to each other. So look what they took off the table. They took off, they said that even the employer-employee is off the table.
Yeah.
I mean, he may have proven that, but that's not constructive fraud. So what if you find yourself the employee of somebody through a Social Security number? Again, they're removing all these things, but in the end, they can't remove all of it. Next, it says, under prevailing judicial opinion, no presumption of a confidential relationship arises from the bare fact that parties to a contract are employer and employee. Rather, additional ties must be brought out in order to create the presumption of a confidential relationship between the two. The absence of a confidential relationship between employer and employee is especially apparent where, as here, the parties were negotiating to bring about a termination of their relationship. In such a situation, each party is expected to look after his own interests, and a lack of confidentiality is implicit in the subject matter of their dealings. We think the allegations of constructive fraud were inadequate. So they took that off. They took it off.
Yep.
Next, it says, as to mistake. I mean, I've used mistake before. It was a mistake. Mistaken identity, mistake, whatever. It says, as to mistake, the amended complaint fails to disclose any facts which would suggest that consent had been obtained through a mistake of fact or law, or of law. The material facts of the transaction. Remember, they're talking about this situation. The resignation where he resigned. They're saying that he signed this thing that evidenced the resignation, and they want to hold him to it through the resignation, through the signature. Let me say that again, through his signature. They want to hold him to his resignation through his signature. I'm trying to be clear about this. It says, as to mistake, the amended complaint fails to disclose any facts that would suggest that consent had been obtained through a mistake of fact or of law. The material facts of the transaction were known to both parties. Neither party was laboring under any misapprehension of law of which the other took advantage. The discussion between plaintiff and the school district representatives principally attempted to evaluate the probable consequences of plaintiff's predicament and to predict the future of course events. The fact that their speculations did not forecast the exact pattern, which events subsequently took, does not provide the basis for a claim that they were acting under some sort of mistake. Think about that, the exact pattern. What if all of a sudden you got off track, literally off track? I have one lifeline, one life, from fertilization to this moment.
Yep.
That's an unbroken line. I don't care how many squiggles, turns, rights, or lefts. It's all one line. But what happens if I accept an alternative? An alternative timeline. They're saying, I mean, even though that's a change, of course. But it says the fact that their speculations did not forecast the exact pattern which events subsequently took does not provide the basis. So it doesn't matter that things changed. It says the doctrine of mistake customarily involves such errors as to the nature of the transaction, the identity of the parties, the identity of the things to which the contract relates, or the occurrence of collateral happenings. So look at this saying here. They're saying the errors of this nature were not present in the case at bench. So they took mistake off. But look what mistake says right here. The doctrine of mistake customarily involves such errors as the nature of the transaction, the identity of the parties, the identity of the things to which the contract relates. And look what it says here. Or the occurrence of collateral happenings. Is not my biology, my infant biology, my fetal biology, collateral to mom's uterine wall biology?
In the placenta.
And is not mom's biology collateral to my biology in the placenta, in the afterbirth? In the human creature, in the material that is considered after birth, the birth certificated person. So, but in this case, But it does say the doctrine of mistake customarily involves such errors as the occurrence of collateral happenings. So again, even though mistake does apply to the fetal maternal, the collateral nature of my biology to mom's biology.
Yep.
My biology on mom's land is an avulsion.
Yep.
Mom's biology on my biology is an accretion.
Yep.
The difference between the two, we know. We know the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next it says, however, the pleading does not set out a claim that plaintiff's consent to the transaction had been obtained. However, the pleading does not set out a claim that plaintiff's consent to the transaction had been obtained through the use of undue influence. Undue influence. And now here this is where it gets crazy cool. Undue influence. In the sense we are concerned with here, is a shorthand legal phrase used to describe persuasion, which tends to be coercive in nature. Persuasion which overcomes the will without convincing the judgment.
Uh-huh.
The hallmark of such persuasion is high pressure, a pressure which works on mental, moral, or emotional weakness to such an extent that it approaches the boundaries of coercion. In this sense, undue influence has been called over-persuasion. Misrepresentations of law or fact are not essential to the charge. Misrepresentations of law or fact are not essential to the charge. What charge? Undue influence. Undue influence. Undue influence. Misrepresentations of law or fact are not essential to the charge of undue influence. I added that. So you know what the charge is.
Yeah.
For a person's will may be overborne without misrepresentation. By statutory definition, undue influence includes taking an unfair advantage of another's weakness of mind or taking a grossly oppressive and unfair advantage of another's necessities or duress.
Yeah.
Oh. Look at that, necessity. So right now, the law of necessity, the fact that you can't get a job, the fact that you can't have a bank account, the fact that you can't do anything in the system, it's necessary that you use the birth certificated birth date or character.
Yep.
It's necessary to use that character for anything you do.
Yep.
In that one nation under God.
Wow. This is amazing.
It's the nation, Linda. It's the nation. It's not the country. It's the nation under God.
Yep.
That's causing all your grief. One nation under God is causing the grief. It's not God. It's not Jesus. It's the nation under God. It's not the country. It's the nation under God. So the nation is what is the nation? It's a collective of believers, the full faith and credit of a group of people. That's the nation. And then you have the United Nations, which is a bunch of those nations agreeing to how we're going to handle things with these kinds of nations. It's not the countries. No, there are no countries involved in this.
Mm-mm.
It's a nation. It's the nation.
Wow.
So let me read that again. It says, by statutory definition, undue influence includes taking an unfair advantage of another's weakness of mind or taking a grossly oppressive and unfair advantage of another's necessities or duress or distress. While most reported cases of undue influence involve persons who bear a confidential relationship to one another, a confidential or authoritative relationship between the parties need not be present when the undue influence involves unfair advantage taken of another's weakness or distress. We paraphrase, and now we're going right back to Hall versus Hall. It says, we paraphrase the summary of undue influence given the jury by Sir James P. Period Wilde in Hall versus Hall, 1868. This is this court now. In Odorizzi, they're talking about Hall versus Hall, 1868. It says, to make a good contract, a man must be a free agent. Pressure of whatever sort which overpowers the will without convincing the judgment is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. Importunity or threats, if carried to the degree in which the free play of a man's will is overborne, constitute undue influence, although no force is used or threatened. A party may be led but not driven, and his acts must be the offspring of his own volition and not the record of someone else's. Look at that. Not the record of someone else's. If my mom created that agreement, the record of my mom's agreement, the record of my mom's idea, her signature, that it says a party may be led but not driven, and his acts must be the offspring of his own volition and not the record of someone else's. Is the birth certificate even my record?
No.
How can it be my record when it has either mom's biology or mom and my biology collectively? Is that my record if it's me and mom?
No.
Is it my record if it's my mom's biology?
No.
No, it's not my record at all. So it says, and not the record of someone else's. In essence, undue influence involves the use of excessive pressure to persuade one vulnerable to such pressure, pressure applied by a dominant subject to a subservient subject. In combination, the elements of undue susceptibility in the servient person and excessive pressure by the dominating person make the latter's influence undue, for it results in the apparent will of the servient person being, in fact, the will of the dominant person. That's the domineering mother.
Yep.
Who is the domineering mother in this situation if you take unum sanctum into consideration?
The church.
The church.
Mm-hmm.
That's the domineering mother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Undue influence, next paragraph. Undue susceptibility may consist of total weakness of mind, which leaves a person entirely without understanding, or a lesser weakness which destroys the capacity of a person to make a contract even though he's not totally incapacitated. Again, that's Peterson versus Ellebrecht. The birth certificated person, realistically, lacks capacity. Remember, it's an infancy.
Yeah.
But because it's an infant, it lacks capacity. And if it lacks capacity, then who has to be brought into the equation? Some sort of a representative. Who is that usually?
An attorney.
An attorney, a bar member.
Mm-hmm.
Goes on to say, or the first element in our equation, a still lesser weakness, which provides sufficient grounds to rescind a contract for undue influence. Hang on a second. I got to go check the front door just in case. I was expecting something, but I think I heard somebody knock.
Okay.
I just have to go upstairs and check.
Wow.
There's something up here. Yeah. Are you following this stuff?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, nothing here unless they put it at the side door. Let me check that real quick.
Let's wait. So I'm thinking.
All right.
It was probably the squirrel.
They're all getting together, commiserating nature. Okay.
Yep.
Back to the paragraph. It says, or the first element in our equation is the lesser weakness, which provides sufficient grounds to rescind a contract for undue influence. Such lesser weakness need not be, look at this, such lesser weakness need not be long-lasting or wholly incapacitating, but may be merely a lack of full vigor due to age. Look at the words he chose. Long need not be long-lasting, only in the womb, nor wholly incapacitating, which means it could be partly incapacitating, but maybe merely meaning what?
Mother.
Motherly, or lack of full vigor due to age. Well, it's look what they did. Due to age, in other words, infancy. It says due to age, comma, physical condition, well, there's your disability, emotional anguish, or a combination of such factors. The reported cases have, of course, they give all these different court cases. The reported cases have usually involved, look at this, we're talking about undue influence. The reported cases have usually involved elderly, sick, senile persons alleged to have executed wills or deeds under pressure. Sick. Luke 5:31 says, they that are whole need not a physician. So if you're not sick, you don't need a remedy. But so they're saying, so the reported cases of what? Of undue influence. The reported cases have usually involved elderly, all right, sick. Well, what about sick? Disabled, diseased. That's the cut right there. Senile persons alleged to have executed wills or deeds under pressure. So sick people that have executed wills. There's your executor right there.
Wow. Yep.
Sick people, disabled, diseased, people that have bought into the birth certificate. They're the ones that are diseased or disabled. Sick people that have alleged to have executed wills or deeds under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So again, in a court situation where you're broken and you have an attorney helping you, they're not really helping you, but they're certainly participating as middlemen, have executed wills. You could just sign here next to the X, says the attorney. Under pressure. You're forced to, because why? If you don't, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
In some of its aspects, this lesser weakness could perhaps be called a weakness of spirit.
Wow.
What's spirit?
You have no voice. The breath.
Well, what is spirit, though, by definition?
Breath.
There's a birth certificate to see. You said voice, didn't you?
No, I said breath afterwards, but maybe you didn't hear.
Okay, but it's breath. So it says in some of its aspects, this lesser weakness could perhaps be called weakness of spirit. No breath.
Yeah.
Does the birth certificated character breathe?
No.
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 It says, but whatever name we give it, this first element of undue influence resolves itself into a lessened capacity of the object to make a free contract.
Wow.
A lessened capacity of the object to make a free contract.
Wow.
Next it says, I know. In wow. the present case, plaintiff Odorizzi has pleaded that such weakness at the time he signed his resignation prevented him from freely and competently applying his judgment to the problem before him. Plaintiff, Odorizzi, declares he was under severe mental and emotional strain at the time because he had just completed the process of arrest, questioning, booking, and release on bail and had been without sleep for 40 hours. It is possible that exhaustion and emotional turmoil may wholly incapacitate a person from exercising his judgment. As an abstract question of pleading, plaintiff has pleaded that possibility and sufficient allegations to state a case for rescission. No, there it is. There, pleaded a possibility. There it is.
Wow.
The door just opened. The door opened.
Yeah. Wow.
And listen to this. Yeah. Undue influence. In its second aspect, involves an application of excessive strength by a dominant subject against a servient subject or object. A dominant subject against a servient object.
Wow.
Am I an object?
No.
If a piece of me is cut off and left behind, could it be considered an object?
Yes.
What if that piece of me is still part of me? Can it be considered separately from me if it's part of the whole?
No.
Can it be considered, say that again?
No, it can't.
No, it can't. And I'm going to use the exact thing. If they clamp and cut the umbilical cord and it falls behind at the hospital, it gets left behind at the hospital, but it's a part of my whole estate, my entire godly estate, my entire kingdom, my entire biological kingdom. Even though it's been separated from me, it is still part of the whole. And if I'm still breathing, if I'm still using the DNA that gave rise to that organ, that gave rise to that biology, then that cannot be considered separately from me.
No.
But what about mom's petition?
Could it be considered? Yeah. Separate from you.
Yeah, this is where it gets weird because, I'm sorry, what?
I would say yes, it could be considered separate from you. It is separate from you.
It's separate from me, and it's not normally part of mom.
Huh?
Remember, mom's uterine wall is mom's uterine wall, but the accretion that was created specifically for my stay in her womb while I was evolving. Mom doesn't normally have that material. Mom doesn't normally have placental material as part of her womb.
No.
So I'm just trying to be clear that it's not normally in mom's body. So no. Could it be considered something separate? I suppose it could. But I just want people to understand that all of me considered as one godly personality cannot be considered separate. So no piece of me can be objectified. It can't be objectified. It can't be made an object separate from the whole.
Yep.
Which is what they're doing with the afterbirth. They're turning it into a sacred object, Linda. A sacred object.
Yeah.
Okay. A servient object in this particular case. It says judicial, I'm back to the court case, judicial consideration of this second element in undue influence has been relatively rare. For there are few cases denying persons who persuade but do not misrepresent the benefit of their bargain. That's a weird, let me say that again. Judicial consideration of the second element. Undue, let me go back to the top. Undue influence in its second aspect involves an application of excessive strength by a dominant subject against a servient object. Judicial consideration of the second element in undue influence has been relatively rare, for there are few cases denying persons who persuade but do not misrepresent the benefit of their bargain. In other words, there is the persuasion, the seduction, but they're not misrepresenting the bargain, the benefit of the bargain. I mean, look at doesn't everybody want to be the beneficiary?
Yep.
Everybody wants to be the beneficiary. Beneficiary of the trust.
Yep. And it's not.
I still don't understand. Yeah, I still don't understand why anybody wants to be the beneficiary. I'm the owner.
Uh-huh.
And that's where usufruct comes in, by the way. The beneficial use of something is a usufructory or usufruct. I don't need the beneficial use of anything that's not mine.
Right.
Now, in the womb, my mom's womb, I benefited, certainly, hell, it kept me alive. I had the beneficial use of her womb, but I have I not evolved beyond it?
Yeah.
This is where the undue influence comes in. If I've evolved beyond it and I don't need it today, but you keep forcing it on me.
That's
the infancy. And the need for that beneficial position of the womb. Hell, in the womb it was necessary. Out of the womb it's not.
Yep.
As an infant it's required. As a mature man, I've evolved long beyond it. This is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
Is it's the birth certificated infancy that is attached to mom. By the way, that's the matrix. Misrepresent the benefit of their bargain. So they're not misrepresenting the beneficial position. Everybody wants to be the beneficiary of the trust. Not me. That's not mine to claim. I'm not an infant. Only infants are the beneficiaries of that trust.
Right.
And, of course, if there's a trust, there's a fiduciary. And if there's fiduciaries, there's administrative process.
Yep.
Goes on to say,
And the rules.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, in that position, the rules can change anytime by whoever is the dominant influence.
Well, every time they want to make a change, they just say, listen, we're going to apply this now. All of those infants have to have vaccines.
Yep.
All of those infants have to wear masks.
Yep.
All of those infants have to carry these IDs, these entities, these identities, this ID card. All of those infants have to do this.
Yep.
Well, what about me? I'm not the infant. And to force me to do any of those things would be undue influence. And we're making that case right now.
Yeah.
It says, yet, logically, the same legal consequences should apply to the results of excessive strength as to the results of undue weakness. Let me say that again. Yet, logically, the same legal consequences should apply to the results of excessive strength. In other words, forced upon you, as to the result of undue weakness, your incapacity.
Mm-hmm.
Whether from weakness on one side or strength on the other, or a combination of the two, undue influence occurs whenever there results. That kind of influence or supremacy of one mind over another by which that other is prevented from acting according to his own wish or judgment, and whereby the will of the person is overborne, and he is induced to do or forbear to do an act which he would not do or would do if left to act freely. Undue influence. This is so amazing what I'm about to read. Undue influence involves a type of mismatch which our statute calls unfair advantage. That's Civil Code 1575. Listen to this. Now, think about this, Linda. Baby umbilical extra-embryonic. Baby comes out of the womb. They clamp and cut the cord. Now, baby's out here as the native on the land. The remains mm-hmm. back there is your link to God, let's say, to the supernatural. Yep. Okay? So you're out here as the baby. The other stuff is in there as the supernatural or the extraordinary, extraordinary. The ordinary baby mm-hmm. out here, the extraordinary stuff in there, right?
Yep.
What is extra? If my biology, my 46 chromosomes, baby umbilical, and my extra embryonic material is ordinary, what is extraordinary?
The accretion, mom's.
Mom's biology. Mom's biology is extraordinary. It's extra.
Uh-huh.
It's a surplus. That's the indulgence. It's the additional consideration that the courts are using. So when that material is attached to you, you're the infant. It's evidenced by that extraordinary material. Now let me read this next line because it's so amazing. It says, whether a person of subnormal capacities has been subjected to ordinary force or a person of normal capacities subjected to extraordinary force, the match is equally out of balance. If will has been overcome against judgment, consent may be rescinded. Consent may be rescinded. Let me read this again. Whether a person of subnormal capacities has been subjected to ordinary force or a person of normal capacities subjected to extraordinary force. Now let me explain those two again. Whether a person of subnormal capacities has been subjected to ordinary force. Subnormal.
That would be the
deficiency.
The deficiency, yeah. That's the word.
It would be
the
unborn version of you.
Yeah.
The unborn, the cut material. Subnormal has been subjected to ordinary. In other words, man's mm-hmm. man, the man, on the outside.
Yep.
So the stuff left behind is now being subjected to, like, we'll call it man's law. Or a person of normal capacities, there's your baby, subjected to extraordinary force, the afterbirth.
The afterbirth, yep.
So you have, in the first statement, you have a birth certificate afterbirth being subjected to ordinary force, or the baby subjected to the extraordinary force of the birth certificate. It's one or the other. You have the outside the womb being subjected to the inside of the womb stuff, or the inside of the womb stuff subjected to the outside of the womb realm. Those are both extremes.
Yeah.
What happens when you're whole? There are no extremes.
Oh, no.
The due process, the evolutionary due process, eliminates this, Linda.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
It eliminates all of this stuff because it can't happen. If they would actually recognize nature's due process, your genuine natural due process from fertilization to last breath, then there isn't any of these questions.
No.
They created this world, so this can happen.
Yep.
It goes on to say the difficulty, of course, lies in determining when the forces of persuasion have over, look at this, The difficulty, of course, lies in determining when the forces of persuasion have overflowed their normal banks and become oppressive floodwaters.
Wow.
There are second thoughts to every bargain. Let me say this. In other words, a man convinced, this is an old salesman's statement. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. In other words, if I can convince you of something, but you still, it's still not yours. You still don't own it. You know what I mean? That's the buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
If you're not happy with your purchase, we're going to have trouble. I know we're going to have trouble down the road.
Right.
That's a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. That they're saying in a different way here. It says there are second thoughts to every bargain. And hindsight is still better than foresight. Undue influence cannot be used as a pretext to avoid bad bargains or escape from bargains which refuse to come up to expectations. Isn't that weird?
Mm-hmm.
It says, cannot be used. Undue influence cannot be used as a pretext to avoid a bad bargain, a deal with the devil,
mm-hmm.
or escape from bargains which refuse to come up to expectations. So the bad bargain would be the addition of mom's biology, which is a surplus or an excess. A bargain which doesn't come up to expectation is not getting all of your property, which is the deficiency.
Right, the deficiency.
So it says undue influence cannot be used as a pretext to avoid too much or too little. Got it?
Yeah.
Well, here we go. It says a woman who buys a dress on impulse, which on critical inspection by her best friend turns out to be less fashionable than she thought, is not legally entitled to set aside the sale on the ground that the saleswoman used all her wiles to close the sale. In other words, she was seduced, let's say, into buying the dress.
Right.
It says, and now look what the next one says. The next example says, a man who buys a tract of desert land in the expectation that it is in the immediate path of the city's growth and will become another Palm Springs, an expectation cultivated in glowing terms by the seller, cannot rescind his bargain when things turn out differently. Look at that, a tract of desert land. That's the island. That's a desert island.
Yep.
So there, you're buying. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. That's the birth certificate tract of land, the motherland. The desert. It's deserted. Cannot rescind his bargain when things turn out differently. So you, hey, I don't want this. But here we go. It says, if we are temporarily persuaded against our better judgment to do something about which we later have second thoughts, we must abide the consequences of the risks inherent in managing our own affairs. However, over-persuasion is generally accompanied by certain characteristics which tend to create a pattern. The pattern usually involves several of the following elements. Discussion of the transaction at an unusual or inappropriate time. Can you think of any time a birthday comes up, Linda? How old are you? Just tell people.
Me?
Yeah.
70... I guess 70.
Are you 70?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I can't say it. So anyway, it says discussion of the pattern usually involves several of the following elements. Discussion of the transaction at an unusual or inappropriate time. All right. At what point is discussing your birthday inappropriate or unusual? I'm using your birthday as the moment of you, the idea of the birth or the implantation or any of that stuff. We know that the birthday, there's a date that they gave it. But at what point would you say the birthday is unusual or inappropriate for you at this point in your life?
Well, now it's unusual or inappropriate for me because I'm 70 years past that.
That's my point. So anytime after infancy is inappropriate.
Yeah.
Anytime after infancy would be unusual.
Yeah.
Let's go to the word unusual. Let's just go to Webster's real quick and go to unusual.
Okay.
And this is going to make my point.
Not usual, uncommon, rare.
So, unusual. And going back to that court case, it says over-persuasion is generally accompanied. Now, remember, they're using the word generally. So it's not unique. It's not specific. It says generally accompanied by certain characteristics which tend to create a pattern. The pattern usually involves several of the following elements. Number one, discussion of the transaction at an unusual or inappropriate time. Unusual or inappropriate. Unusual. If you're 70 years old, Libba, and I'm 64, and somebody asked me when my birthday is,
that would be an inappropriate time.
It certainly. I'm 63 years past it.
Yeah.
It's certainly unusual. Huh?
I said, are you only 63?
Only. So look what it says. It says unusual or inappropriate. And then, of course, unusual leads to not ordinarily encountered. This is, I went to uncommon. I clicked on the hyperlink uncommon, and it says not ordinarily encountered. Ordinary, outside the womb.
Yeah.
That's ordinary, because, and ordinary is also only your biology.
Yeah.
Now, I really want you to think about this. This is so hard for people to see. If my biology is ordinary and mom's biology is extraordinary, then the only time the extraordinary is applicable is when?
When somehow the mother's is attached to me.
Right, when you need it.
Yeah, when I need
it. When you need it in the womb.
Right.
So it's not ordinarily encountered. I'm at uncommon right now. It's not ordinarily encountered outside the womb, is it?
No.
When you're looking at it biologically, I'm using their words, but I'm looking at it biologically. I'm never going to say, oh, my mom's accretion is not attached to me.
Yeah.
But I'm using their words.
Yeah.
I wouldn't use the word accretion, but I know it means extraordinary.
Yeah.
So when I hear the word extraordinary or extraordinary, I know they're talking about what's not ordinary, what is not mine. Mine is all of my kingdom. Now, don't get me wrong. Mom created this
extraordinary path for me, this material, so I could exist. It's extraordinary what she did.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary even for her. Because in her normal day-to-day function, she didn't have that material, Linda. It's extraordinary even for her.
Yes, yes.
She created it specifically to help me get here. And when I was here, she didn't need it anymore, so she expelled it. She got rid of it. It's extraordinary, but it's only used when I'm an infant. So if I'm not an infant anymore, it's unusual, because unusual is what led me to uncommon, and uncommon led me to not ordinarily encountered. Unusual. Remarkable.
The example of uncommon in the first is an uncommon plant.
What does that mean? What's an uncommon plant? Implantation.
The implantation, yeah. Into the wall of the uterus. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Again, you learn the biology to see how the words are being applied. When you know extra, when you know that your biology is part of nature, it's just natural.
Yeah.
It becomes ordinary. So all of my 46 chromosome kingdom would be considered ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the number one is ordinary.
Yeah.
So extraordinary implies more than what's ordinary. It's also uncommon, says it's remarkable or exceptional. I clicked on exceptional. It says forming an exception, rare. But remember, this is part of nature, though. I'm not angry about it. I'm trying to show something. That's all.
Yeah.
Let me go back to the case. So that was one discussion of the transaction. Let's go to transaction real quick. Transaction. 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 Trans. T-R-A-N-S.
Transaction.
There it is. Trans. On or to the other side of, to, it says across, trans, across. That's what it means, or through. So think about a transaction. Think about you coming through mom.
Yep.
Through the birth canal.
Mm-hmm.
Trans means to go through or to get to the other side of or to cross over, across, trans, action, an action across something. Are you going across the motherland?
Yes.
That's what this is. You have a right of way over the motherland. It's a trans across action. You're crossing over the motherland. You're getting from nowhere to now here. Through a transaction within mom.
Yep.
So it says, discussion of the transaction. What? Why are we talking about me crossing from the unborn to the born? Why are we talking about any of that infancy stuff at this point in my life?
Right.
Discussion of the transaction at an unusual or inappropriate time. How about inappropriate? Let's just do that. Inappropriate. Not appropriate. Unsuitable. We're clicking on unsuitable. Not fitting or right for the use or purpose. Not suitable.
is infancy or pushing infancy upon a 64-year-old man or 70-year-old woman, is it suitable to even be talking about that?
No.
No, it isn't. I mean, it's so obvious to everybody. But again, this is about undue influence.
Mm-hmm.
Number two says consummation of the transaction in an unusual place. I'm going to go to consummation.
Where are you at right now?
Webster's.
I know. It's inappropriate. Took you to unsuitable.
I'm down at number two where it says consummation of the transaction in an unusual place. I'm still at the court case.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't switch back.
So number two, consummation of the transaction. Sorry, that's not my brain working. Consummation of the transaction. I, by the way, I don't know how in the world you can follow me. I mean, I'm just going and going and going, and for some reason I expect you to be on the same page as me everywhere I go.
Well, I am about 90% of the time, but every once in a while I get lost.
It blows my mind. So I'm back to the court case. Maybe I need to be better at telling you where I'm at.
That's all right.
Anyway,
Number two.
Consummation of the transaction in an unusual place. Consummation. The act of consummating. Look at this. The ultimate end. The ultimate end to finish.
Is consummation.
His consummation could finish. I'm going to go to consummating. And extremely skilled or accomplished, the highest degree, complete in every detail. Perfect. There it is. So the courts are perfecting your arrival.
Yeah.
They're finishing the delivery in the courtroom.
Yes. Yes.
They're finishing the delivery, which was not delivered originally. Remember, delivery is... what? It's the baby, and the fetus, and his membranes. They're finishing the delivery. They're perfecting the delivery. They're consummating the delivery in the courtroom.
Yeah.
They're fulfilling what the original intent of your arrival. They're pretending that you're arriving finally. 70 years later, 64 years later, they're pretending to complete the delivery when you show up in a courtroom. Or maybe they're pretending to complete it through the mail. And then you owe them something for that service. I don't know. I'm just pointing out that it doesn't make any sense. It's ridiculous to even believe some of this shit that these guys have come up with. But it's working.
But,
it's been working for a long time.
Yep. But if I know... I'm whole from fertilization to all present and accounted for from fertilization to last breath, and I'm complete in every detail. I'm perfect.
Yeah. Then they can't pretend to be finishing the job in the courtroom the transaction, consummating the transaction in an unusual place.
Yeah, I would say the courtroom is an unusual place to complete that transaction.
Well, sure. It sure seems like it's working so far. Number three says, insistent demand that the business be finished at once.
Mm.
Right now. We got to do this right now. Remember, this is how, this is over persuasion.
Are you guilty or not guilty, Kurt?
Yeah.
You got to tell me. Decide
right
now.
Yeah, we got to move. We got 15 more cases ahead of you or behind you here.
Right. Oh, you didn't decide. I'll plead for you.
Number four says extreme emphasis on untoward consequences of delay. If we don't do this now, this is going to happen to you.
Yeah.
Number five says the use of multiple persuaders by the dominant side against a single servient party.
Oh, wow.
The use of multiple persuaders. Oh, God, everybody's against you in there. You're the only one there trying to stand your ground, and everybody's against you.
Absolutely. I have personal
including your friends and family.
Yep. Yep.
Just admit to the birthday, Kurt. Just admit to the birthday.
Yep.
Six is weird. Absence of third-party advisors to the servient party.
Hmm.
Now, remember, the servient party is the fetal part of the system. Mm-hmm. You have the dominant maternal and the servient fetal.
Mm-hmm.
Absence of third-party advisors to the servient party. Seven says statements that there is no time to consult financial advisors or attorneys. If a number of these elements are simultaneously present, the persuasion may be characterized as excessive. Okay, the cases are illustrative. Okay, here we go. More versus more. The pregnant wife, now, let me see if this case,
you're looking for your
years? I'm just going to go to the bottom. I'm just going to the bottom of that one. It says, taking an unfair advantage of another's weakness of mind is undue influence, and the law will not permit the retention of an advantage thus obtained. I don't want to do that one. That case is hard. People can read it on their own. How about Wedger versus Roca? Let me see what that says. Oh, okay. I mean, just, some of these are pretty simple. In that one, it says, plaintiff, while confined in a cast in a hospital, gave a release of claims for personal injuries for a relatively small sum to an agent who spent 2 hours persuading her to sign. At the time of signing, plaintiff was in a highly nervous and hysterical condition and suffering much pain, and she signed the release in order to terminate the interview. The court held that the release had been secured by use of undue influence. Again, when you hear these cases of the signature, we're talking about a signature now.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you sign that if it wasn't your will? Well, I signed it because of undue influence. Just use the word.
Mm-hmm.
Use the words undue influence, and then you'll be able to explain it later. But undue influence is, again, you can beat me to death, but you're not going to get me to change my mind. That's undue influence.
Mm-hmm.
I know what is right. My origin is fertilization. My last breath is this moment, is the present. And it's all one unbroken lifetime. I know the truth of the matter, all present and accounted for from fertilization to last breath. Anything outside of that is undue influence.
Yeah.
Anything outside of the truth. And by the way, that truth involves, it also includes evolutionary process, due process. So when you understand all of this stuff that you, from fertilization to last breath, is already including the natural evolutionary due process, then there's nothing left behind for them to deliver. They don't get to be the Bailey of anything, the gratuitous Bailey of anything. Nothing has been bailed.
No.
I'm still using it, Linda. I'm still using exactly what I was given at the beginning. I'm still using the DNA. It's mine, and mine alone.
Mm-hmm.
In Fan versus McNutt. Let's see if this one makes any sense. Oh. No, that, again, people, the difference between rape and seduction. Once you understand that difference, you can go on to say, I didn't want to have sex at all.
Yeah.
I wasn't convinced either way. So think about that. So rape is one thing, forced sex. Seduction is being convinced to having sex. But what if neither? I never was convinced.
Yeah.
I was seduced or I was raped, but that's, both of those are undue influence. Well, seduction is not. That's what they're saying. They're saying seduction's not undue influence because you did it. You changed your mind. You were seduced. That's the beneficiary position.
Yes.
You're seduced by the benefit.
Yeah.
I would call beneficiary them seducing you.
Yeah.
In declaiming the birth certificate of character. Well, why do you want that? Anyway, I think the benefit is the seduction. The beneficiary has been seduced.
Yeah. Yeah.
It says the difference between legitimate persuasion, I'm still at the court case, the difference between legitimate persuasion and excessive pressure, like the difference between seduction and rape, rests to a considerable extent in the manner in which the parties go about their business. For example, if a day or two after Odorizzi's release on bail, the superintendent of the school had called him into his office during business hours and directed his attention to those provisions of the education code compelling his leave of absence and authorizing his suspension on the filing of written charges, had told him that the district contemplated filing written charges against him, had pointed out the alternative of resignation available to him, had informed him he was free to consult counsel or any advisor he wished and to consider the matter overnight and return with his decision the next day, it is extremely unlikely that any complaint about the use of excessive pressure could ever have been made against the school district. So look at everything that this guy had to do.
Yeah.
They had to tell him everything. They even had to show him. It says, directed his attention to those provisions of the education code, compelling his leave of absence and authorizing his suspension. Everything. Now, go ahead.
From what we read earlier, they also threatened to publicize it. So they're not including that. Would that be undue influence?
I think so. What's really funny is, to see when they now publish the mugshots.
Uh-huh.
I think that's as nasty as you can get. They're publishing mugshots now, which is unbelievable to me. I think that. But again, if there is no right to privacy because the matter has been made public through the deposition or deposit, next it says, but this is right after it says they probably couldn't have been found guilty of excessive pressure, but it says, but according to the allegations of the complaint, this is not the way it happened. And if it had happened that way, plaintiff would never have resigned. Now think about that. So again, if they had done all this stuff, if they had told them all this stuff, it says the plaintiff wouldn't have resigned.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have put his signature to something. He wouldn't have sent in his resignation. It says, rather, the representatives of the school board undertook to achieve their objective, by over-persuasion and imposition to secure plaintiff's signature, but not his consent to his resignation through a high-pressure carrot-and-stick technique under which they assured plaintiff they were trying to assist him. He should rely on their advice. There wasn't time to consult an attorney. If he didn't resign at once, the school district would suspend and dismiss him from his position and publicize the proceedings. But if he did resign, the incident wouldn't jeopardize his chances of securing a teaching post elsewhere. Plaintiff thus has pleaded both subjective and objective elements entering the undue influence equation and stated sufficient facts to put an issue to the question whether his free will had been overborne by defendant's agents at a time when he was unable to function in a normal manner. By the way, again, even at infancy when they clamp and cut the cord, I wasn't able to make any decisions back then.
No.
You got to really look at all of this and just say, I mean, that infancy, that infant capacity that is now frozen in time on a public record, I mean, that's what they're getting you to claim. They're getting you to claim or forcing you to claim a birthday that only evidences infancy. It only evidences infancy, which then evidences incapacity or lack of capacity.
Yeah.
So again, all of the things that's going on, I mean, I say that just being positioned as an infant as a 64-year-old man is not, I certainly can't agree to that. I'll never agree to it. I'm not an infant. It's that simple.
Yeah.
It's not because I don't feel like an infant or I don't feel like no, I actually am not an infant. It's that simple. I'm really not an infant. I can't ever agree to that. I don't want to be treated right. like an infant.
Right.
I want to be treated with respect as a mature man. I don't want to be treated as an infant.
Well,
but the birthday does exactly that.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it even undue influence to walk up to you and say, I want your birthday, and if you don't give it to me, I'm going to take this gun and force you out of the car.
I would you comply out of necessity.
Right. I understand that. But it's still
but
undue
then you,
influence.
But then you deal with it, you know, prior and say this, you know, it's obviously a case of undue influence.
Right.
I mean, by the way, understand that his authority, then maybe this is one of the keys of the whole damn thing. The authority of the officer is only granted under that circumstance that a birthday is given.
Yes. Yes.
So they have no authority whatsoever until you give them a birthday. But at the level of over persuasion certainly evidences undue influence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was my point. Yeah.
But remember that it's the undue influence itself. The undue influence is the claiming of the birthday. Mm-hmm. Everything that follows that is because of undue influence. Of course, everything. I think everything's under influence in that situation.
Yeah, that's everything. Was kind of my point. I mean, you could say they're not letting you say duress or all of these other things, fraud, all of that. They're basically negating all of those. But all of those can be true. But the pressure of, you know, I mean, think about how much when the red lights go on behind you, the rule of travel is that you pull over to get out of the way and then they come and go up behind you. Who is not feeling less than, subservient to that influence coming at them from the other vehicle coming towards them?
I think any reasonable man would pretty much at the threat of arrest or at gunpoint, any reasonable man would deal with this later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any reasonable man would deal with this later. They wouldn't try to hold court out there. You might want to just, you know, if somebody says, you know, license and registration. I don't know. I mean, you could choose to just present it.
Yeah.
But then remember that the license and registration is all undue influence as well.
Right. Yeah, I'm just saying that I wouldn't say to hold court out there. I'm just saying the event itself is an example of undue influence.
Absolutely, but there's a presumption of authority to begin with, and a presumption
right.
of authority is the undue influence of the birthday. In other words, because
right.
everybody out there believes in a birthday or believes that a birthday applies to them, then everybody doing
yep.
their job out there in the street also believes that birthdays apply to everybody, and it's the birthday itself that affects the undue influence over everybody, forcing everybody into the infancy capacity or lack of capacity.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's all the same, and it always revolves around this 365-day infancy and the celebration of the infancy.
Yeah.
And let's see where this finishes. It says, it was overborn. Defendant's agents at the time, when he was unable to function in a normal manner, it was sufficient to pose the ultimate question whether a free and competent judgment was merely influenced or whether a mind was so dominated as to prevent the exercise of an independent judgment. Okay, there's the answer to your question right there. You were asking what happens out there in the street. It says, it was sufficient to pose the ultimate question, whether a free and competent judgment was merely influenced or whether a mind was so dominated as to prevent the exercise of an independent judgment.
Yep.
The question cannot be resolved by an analysis of pleading, but requires a finding of fact. It says, we express no opinion on the merits of plaintiff's case or the propriety of his continuing to teach school or the timeliness of his rescission. We do hold that his pleading, liberally construed, states a cause of action for rescission of a transaction to which his apparent consent had been obtained through the use of undue influence. So they, the court, found undue influence.
Right.
And so they did what? They rescinded the signature or the resignation. Because remember, the school board was going to hold him to his resignation.
Mm-hmm.
So he in effect, resigned. But he said, no, I don't want to resign now since I was found innocent or whatever, found not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want to resign. Well, you have to resign. We have your signature right here. So the whole idea of the signature in the contract is based upon the signature, and the fact that the signature was rescindable or was rescinded through undue influence is also stating that every signature
mm-hmm.
can be rescinded through undue influence. Every signature. Again,
yeah.
And if everything out there is based upon the birth certificated character or the
mm-hmm.
excessive nature of the birth certificated character.
Yep.
Remember that the birthday or the placenta evidences two positions, Linda. It evidences a surplus or an excess, which is mom's accretion. It also evidences a deficiency in your estate.
Yep.
Or the baby's estate. So it's not good either way.
No.
So it's unduly influential on both it evidences disease or a disability on your end, or it evidences a public burden with mom's accretion.
Yeah.
You can't win.
Huh. But that's the whole point, is that it is undue influence of someone subservient. You can't win if you're in that position, ever. If someone else can change the rules, and they can change the rules anytime they want, you can't win. You can't. Why do you even want to go into the war? You've already lost.
That's why, to me, you stick with reality. You stick with the truth no matter what. I mean, by the way, what's really funny is judgment. The idea of, I'm going to go back to Hall versus Hall. In Hall versus Hall, it says to make a good contract, a man must be a free agent.
Yeah.
Pressure of whatever sort which overpowers the will without convincing the judgment is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. It's right there.
Yeah.
So no valid contract can exist unless I have been convinced in my judgment. I have to agree with you. That's part, just one of the elements of a agreement, a meeting of the minds. We agree on this. I don't agree that I'm an infant.
Mm-hmm.
And again, pressure of whatever sort which overpowers the will. Think you can beat me to death, but I'm never, ever going to be the infant.
Yeah.
I can't be. Evolutionary process, I'm long beyond it.
Yeah. Judgment in Merriam-Webster's, the first definition, is the process of forming an opinion or evaluation by discerning and comparing. And
discernment.
Discernment and exercise of capacity.
Say that again?
The 2B for judgment is the exercise of this capacity. The capacity for judging, discernment, and B is the exercise of this capacity.
What happens if you lack capacity because of the infancy?
Exactly.
You can see how this can become an impossibility.
Well, it's an impossible contract. How can you have discernment if you don't know the rules of the game? How am I supposed to play Monopoly if I don't know I don't know any of the rules? I don't know what's going on, but I'm a party to it, unknowing.
I like the simplicity of Hall versus Hall.
Yes, that's so awesome.
Pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will without convincing the judgment, is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. What that right there to me is almost as good as Cruden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every man is independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. This is one of those
two together.
Things. Right. So I'm going to stick with nature. I'm going to stick with nature and the evolutionary process, the due process, the evolutionary due process of nature. By the way, the due process is the delivery. So if nature delivers me, there is no additional due process for them to perfect in their courts.
Mm-hmm.
It's already done. I don't need to be delivered from you or delivered from evil. Nature delivered me.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. Again, to know the biology makes it possible to think this way. Mm-hmm. You know what? Let's do this. I'm going to take a 2-minute break so I can go use the men's room. And then I'm going to finish up on something. Up on something that we haven't done it for a long time, but I'll just throw it in the back of this because the biology is the most important thing to learn how the biology gives rise to all these things. But then you don't use the biology when you're talking to these people. You use the language behind that evidences the knowledge of the biology, but you don't use the biology.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll be right back. There.
Yep.
God, I just love that. I love this pressure of whatever sort, which overpowers the will without convincing the judgment, is a species of restraint under which no valid contract can be made. Again, you can beat me to death, but I'm not changing my mind.
Yeah.
I'll stick with nature. Man's independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. I'm going to stick with nature. Yeah, unbelievable. Okay, so I'm just going to, I'll dig up one thing and I'll read it and then we'll be done, because I think that this is, you could do an entire call on what I'm about to do, but I just want to go back to what kind of started it all for me way back when, which was, Mandel House.
Mm.
And I think that when you understand it, let me see if this is
the Mandel House quote.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where you find it, I'll just find it somewhere. I know I put it in, did I put it in this book? Or did I, yeah, I think I put it, it's in this book. Yeah. It's actually in this book. Let me see if I can find it. I really hate, you know, dealing with all the Patriot shit. But this is one of those quotes that you can't make it up. I mean, somebody wrote this. I mean, and you have to know what I'm talking about in order for this quote to even exist.
Mm-hmm.
I think I found one. All right. Supposedly, by the way, Mandel House was around when the Federal Reserve was created, and he was, an advisor supposedly to Woodrow Wilson. I mean, just he was involved in all the nastiest stuff that ever happened to this country to turn it into whatever it ended up being. Okay, so here it is. I'm going to read this. And it doesn't matter where you find it. I found it. Yeah, it doesn't matter where you find it. It says, very soon. This supposedly was actually stated in a private meeting with Woodrow Wilson. But everything changed after this. I mean, even Chapter 12, 67th Congress occurred in 1921. This supposedly happened between 1917 and 1919, somewhere in there. So then you have Chapter 12, 67th Congress, you know. It says, very soon, every American will be required to register their biological property in a national system designed to keep track of the people. And that will operate under the ancient system of pledging. By such methodology, we can compel people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer being unable to work and earn a living. They will be our chattel, and we will hold the security interest over them forever by operation of the law merchant under the scheme of secured transactions. Americans, by unknowingly or unwittingly delivering the bills of lading to us, will be rendered bankrupt and insolvent forever to remain economic slaves through taxation, secured by their pledges. They will be stripped of their rights and given a commercial value designed to make us a profit, and they will be none the wiser, for not one man in a million could ever figure our plans. And if by accident one or two should figure it out, we have in our arsenal plausible deniability. After all, this is the only logical way to fund government, by floating liens and debt to the registrants in the form of benefits and privileges. This will inevitably reap us huge profits beyond our wildest expectations and leave every American a contributor to this fraud which we will call social insurance. Without realizing it, every American will insure us for any loss we may incur, and in this manner, every American will unknowingly be our servant, however begrudgingly. The people will become helpless and without any hope for their redemption, and we will employ the high office of president of our dummy corporation to foment this plot against America. There were so many words in this, Linda, that we're even in the court case today.
Yes.
I mean, right up, when I saw every American will be forced to register or suffer being unable to work or earn a living, that's undue influence.
Yeah, right there.
Right there. They created a birth certificated system that holds you to an a lack of capacity through infancy, subjecting that infant king to regency. So then they get to administrate everything forever.
Yep.
And all you have to do is claim a birthday. And so it's the birthday itself with the attachment of the maternal biology, which is the undue influence. That's, by the way, I will finish with one last thing, because I believe the birth certificate, the certificate of deposit, which is a pledge, I think that that is actually, and I'll finish with, indulgence again. I believe that the maternal part, the accretion of mom, is the indulgent position. So I'm going to go to indulgence at Webster's, because that's the influence. Again, I started with it yesterday or Tuesday, but I believe that it's the maternal accretion, which is the excessive amount, which is the consideration. So once you claim the birth certificated character, that consideration, the maternal part, becomes the consideration. Your biology is not the consideration. It's mom's biology attached to you that is the excessive, the excess indulgent. It says, willing to allow, this is indulgent at Webster's, willing to allow excessive leniency, generosity, or consideration. It says indulging or characterized by indulgence. I'm going to go to, it says willing to allow excessive leniency, generosity, or consideration. So let's shorten it up. Willing to allow excessive consideration.
So now I'm at
Webster's.
Okay, now.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to go to consideration.
Okay.
Consideration, continuous and careful thought. Here it is. Look at 2A. A matter weighed or taken into account when formulating an opinion or plan. A matter weighed and or taken into account. That matter is the accretion.
Mm-hmm.
Look, go down to 6B.
Wow.
The inducement to a contract or other legal transaction, specifically an act or forbearance or the promise thereof done or given by one party in return for the act or promise of another.
Wow.
Inducement to a contract. That, I mean, I know that most people, that would be the beneficiary position, but I'm just saying that when you go down this road, the certificate of indulgence, the indulgence itself, is the excessive consideration.
Mm-hmm.
That's the indulgence.
Yeah.
Number two for indulgence says done or enjoyed as a special treat or pleasure. And then, of course, synonyms say charitable, clement, easy, soft. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm saying that if you're not whole, if you don't recognize the equity of that position, mm-hmm. the equity. Again, the difference is equity doesn't aid a volunteer. If you tell the truth, you're not at war. If you make a decision or if you claim a birthday, you're at war.
Mm-hmm.
Nature's nature. I mean, you don't get to change it. You don't get to pretend anything. I mean, just because you say something doesn't make it true.
Mm-hmm.
From fertilization to last breath, all present and accounted for, that applies to everybody listening to this.
Yeah.
It's not an opinion, and it's not my ego.
No.
It's not my opinion, and it's not my ego. It's what it is. Yeah, I'd get rid of those people right away. I mean, mm-hmm. when people are going to argue with reality, if they want their ideas, you know, their ideas out there, that's ego. Nature's mm-hmm. not ego. All right.
Well,
nice and short today.
Nice
and short. Yeah. All right. I better get over there and help Debbie do a couple things today.
Okay.
She's opening the shop up for the first time since the flood. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'll get over there and help her. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
As usual, it's pretty enlightening.
Yeah.
I'll probably it's put this
amazing.
Up.
Yeah.
It is. And I think that word alone I think the knowledge of undue influence. I mean, mm-hmm. all this stuff fits together, but when you keep going and you go, what will the courts respond to? What mm-hmm. will the courts respond mm-hmm. to if you know what's behind it? If you really know what's behind your words, not just throwing mm-hmm. words out there, but actually know what's behind them, you know?
Yeah.
That's what's important.
That case, from Hall versus Hall, and then Cruden v. Neal, the two of those together. Yeah, amazing.
I think so. I think that when you know nature, you know. Every man is independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. And mm-hmm. then you know this.
Yeah.
All right. Gonna go.
Oh. Bye.
Have a great day. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.